Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is Commodity Week on WILL Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Dave Dickey and I both away from the radio station for the next couple of weeks. A special guest for Commodity Week this week, recorded on July the 10th, 2006, a Monday. Daryl Good, Extension Ag Economist from the U of I, joining us in studio. Good afternoon to you, Daryl.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about a basis during the summer months, and historically, I suppose we can ought to go back and look at that to begin with and decide where things might be headed from there.
Well, historically, in central Illinois, as an example, and I think probably holds for much of the Midwest, we expect to see the summer basis probably really reach its peak in May, June. That's when farmers get busy doing other things, particularly in May. The flow of grain slows down. If demand is good, then we see a strengthening basis that typically then weakens a little bit if the crop is coming on in good shape and summer marketings then pick up. This year, we've seen a little bit of a different pattern. We did see a really weak basis on corn and soybeans early spring into the early summer months. And the reasons for that may be many, and I don't really know of anybody that's quantitatively tried to assess why that's happened. It's probably a little early to really be able to do that. But on the surface, it appears you've got two or three things going on that some of those will persist the remainder of the summer. One is we clearly have higher costs now in moving and storing grain with higher fuel costs, transportation costs have escalated quite a bit, and that gets reflected in most cases in a weaker basis in the interior markets. Secondly, with rising interest rates, that means storage costs go up. So if you're looking at prices relative to a futures that's still a month or two away from maturing, you've got more cost involved in holding that crop until maturity. So 8.25% prime. A year ago we were at 6%. So that gets built into bases. Thirdly, we do have relatively large supplies of old crop corn and soybeans around remaining from the 2005 harvest. Farmers have carried quite a bit into the summer months this year. Just as of June 1, when we have the quarterly stocks estimate, nationwide, we had about a half a billion bushels more corn and soybeans, and so the thinking is that those will have to be moved to market before harvest and could pressure the basis, so that gets kind of built in. And then thirdly, we have this phenomenon that futures prices have been supported perhaps by some unusual speculative demand that doesn't get reflected in the cash market. We like to argue that cash markets have to own up to supply and demand. Users and suppliers determine the price, and the cash market can't avoid that. So if futures prices are a bit inflated because of speculative demand and the cash price doesn't follow, then you get a weaker basis as well. And I think where we really saw that is in the soft red winter wheat basis. Wheat prices in general pretty high because of drought in the hard red winter areas and concerns about the spring wheat crop. So that kind of inflated soft red winter futures at Chicago as well, but we got an awfully good crop of soft red winter wheat, and so basis was pretty weak. All of that said, we have seen some improvement in the basis as we moved into early July, still weak by historic standards, but not as weak as it was in the spring of the year. So all of those factors that suggest bases will be a little bit on the weak side are persisting. The one big unknown at this point is the size of the 2006 corn and soybean crops. If those are on track for being a trend yield, big crops, so that there's no need to carry old crop inventories, the basis is going to stay pretty weak, pretty sloppy, I think, through the summer months. On the other hand, if we do see some significant condition drop in the crop and some drop in yield potential, then I think summer basis might be a bit stronger than it normally is, and certainly stronger than what we're looking at right now. So kind of an unusual year where the cost factors are probably driving bases to weaker levels. But we have awfully good demand for corn, and if we threaten the crop, then bases is going to tend to snap back to a more normal level. Now, when you look at new crop, Todd, maybe a clearer reflection of costs in new crop bases, typically in central Illinois, average at country locations, we're looking at this time of year, bids 20 to 25 cents under December futures. Right now, we're running closer to 30, 31 cents under Dec. So you might argue that there's 8 to 10 cents weaker bases on new crop corn and soybeans. And I think much of that, if not all of that, is really cost-driven. So higher transportation costs, higher storage costs. We're seeing an 8 to 10 cent weaker basis. Everything else equal, you would argue that kind of pattern is going to continue, that unless we pull down the size of the crop so that there is a shortage, then basis is going to tend to be weaker than what we've seen in the past just because costs are higher.
And that, as you suggested, that will not only be this year, but that will continue into the future because of those increased costs. And they're not likely to go away anytime soon, unless the cost of energy would happen to dive. But it doesn't appear that will be the case.
It certainly does not. I mean, most of the transportation cost is energy related, certainly the variable cost. And storage is very much interest cost for existing facilities. Those factors are going to be there. Now, one thing that is different than what we've seen historically, of course, is this rapid expansion in ethanol capacity. And for local markets where we are seeing expanded domestic demand for corn, we may see a bit different basis patterns than for markets that rely primarily on the export market, for example, where that's a very competitive, very cost-driven basis situation. Certainly, particularly if we get into a bit of a shortage on the size of the crop and domestic users start competing very aggressively to get corn, basis levels could be abnormally strong. So, you know, it's the old story: on one hand, weaker; on the other hand, potentially stronger. So it's going to really bear watching and bear monitoring on a local basis more than we have seen in the past.
A couple of months ago, by the time this airs, and again, this is Monday, July the 10th at the recording, you were on Commodity Week and you made a comment on ethanol and local basis, and suggesting in your mind that ethanol production, as widespread as it appears it will become, would not likely bring basis up across the board, that it wouldn't float the whole boat. And are you capable, I mean, do you base that assumption on the idea that, for instance, if you look here in Champaign County at the Andersons, we know that their bid generally is 8 or 9 cents under or something like that, where everybody else is 20 cents under. And is that how you're able to, is that how you base that?
Well, I think a couple ways, right? So, I mean, for some markets that are very competitively located so that they can go either domestic processing or export or the feed market, you'll see a very strong basis already in those markets. Perhaps adding ethanol capacity may not change that so much. The other thing is just looking at it from a broad picture, with ethanol still accounting for less than 20% of our domestic use of corn, and you know, less than 15% of our total use of corn. It's hard to argue that that alone is going to just by itself strengthen the basis significantly, but it does mean that we're likely to see more variability in the basis as local markets need corn or don't need corn. They're going to reflect that in basis bids.
We had a discussion on Commodity Week last weekend about interest rates, about the North Koreans, about China, and about ethanol, and the idea that the price of corn, which I think the cash price by USDA's account for the coming year is 245. Okay, I think 245, 250. That the price of corn may find, as we thought about this in the late 1990s under Freedom to Farm, a new plateau, and maybe this cash price of 245 or 250, but there might be a new plateau for where the cash price of corn might settle into. But there was some concern that, like the late 1990s, when Asia fell apart economically, that there were other concerns this time around, with North Korea rattling its saber a little bit, that China might back out of the market in the United States, and that could create some problems. What do you foresee as potential pitfalls here?
Well, it's a very intriguing topic and an important one, and it has many faces to it. On the surface, you say stronger demand for corn, higher consumption rates, everything else equal, should drive us to higher price levels in order to make sure that we continue to expand production to meet that increased consumption and to keep corn very competitive with any other crops that might want to use that land. The other side of that, of course, is that would argue in the same direction, is that we are seeing a fairly rapid escalation of the cost of producing corn. And from an economist's viewpoint, in the long run, prices, you know, absent subsidy programs and other things, in the long run, prices settle out at the average cost of production. So if you're saying we're driving the cost of corn production up because of higher energy-related prices, that suggests that you have to ratchet the price up as well to maintain profitability at the same level. So not thinking about an income standpoint, but just from a price standpoint, you say higher costs, then you ratchet up the price. In my mind, it's very similar to what we went through in the early 70s when we came out of a long period of a dollar corn. Then we had this big bubble to $3 to $4 corn. That didn't persist, but when it was over, we didn't settle back to a dollar corn. We basically settled back to $2 corn because we had ratcheted costs up with the energy-related costs, interest cost, and other things in the 70s. Now, in the mid-90s, when we hit $5 corn, we were really not in an inflationary, cost-driven place. We really had a scenario of a short supply, strong demand, a bubble on prices. Then we settled right back down to basically $2 corn again. So I think the current situation perhaps is a bit more like the early 70s than it is the mid-90s, that we're probably looking at a new plateau on prices. Does that mean expanded profitability? Not necessarily, but it might also augur for more variable prices like we had in the 70s because of the strong demand situation that we think we're moving into here, particularly for corn over the next few years.
I think you said that on the last Commodity Week, too, you said that after Commodity Week, now that I recall that you had made, somebody had asked you whether, I think it was Mike Zuzulo, in fact, had asked you whether you thought this was more like the 70s or the 90s, and you had said the 70s, but I didn't think about the increased cost at that point. So really, even if you threw ethanol out of the mix, that what we're seeing in the marketplace is more, could potentially be more involved in your mind with the increased cost of producing corn rather than the potential demand. I know there, when you look out to 2007 and 2008, there might be some demand portion of that, but that we're settling into that 250, 260 range, and that might be mostly involved with what would be the increased cost of production and most likely the continued increased cost of production, not a temporary increased cost of production. Given that, how do you factor ethanol demand into the future?
Well, I think the way it's playing out and what a lot of people have settled in their own mind is that, particularly in the foreseeable future, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, ethanol is going to continue to expand and corn is going to continue to be the primary feedstock for that. So clearly, if that's going to happen, and we also have a slowly expanding livestock industry, and we have continued strong exports, then production has to expand on corn. And so a price has to be high enough on corn that we get the necessary level of production. One question is, at what rate are average yields going to increase? Most believe that we don't have enough yield potential to just keep acreage stagnant and meet our growing needs just from another 1.5 to 2 bushels an acre each year, that we do need more acres. So I think the scenario that's unfolding is in the next 3, 4, 5 years, we're going to push U.S. producers to plant more corn. Now, the other question then is, what's going to happen to the demand of the products, the crops that we're pushing out of production, if biodiesel demand continues to expand or increases? Some would argue, well, we need more soybeans too. How can you have more corn, more soybeans with a fixed land base? I think then that suggests that perhaps soybean production will have to come from someplace else, obviously South America or Brazil. So when you look at corn and soybean prices, you say corn has to be high enough to encourage U.S. producers to continue to expand in the near future. Soybean prices, the barometer there will be prices. The barometer will be prices will have to be high enough that Brazilian farmers expand soybean production. And so I think that's really how we're going to look at markets as we move forward.
It's kind of interesting. We thought about this in previous years as it related to BT products or bio-developed products, those bioengineered products, thinking that the U.S. would be bioengineered soybeans that Brazil would not, and that there would be two markets, but nobody really had thought about the Brazilians would just grow soybeans and the U.S. farmers would grow primarily corn. Are they going to be satisfied, I wonder, with not having a crop rotation?
Well, I think these issues about biotechnology and bioengineering and crop rotation are integrated. That is, to what extent can we manage the problems that have historically been associated with a monoculture, with continuous corn, insect disease and weed pressure, to what extent can those be controlled and at what cost can they be controlled? If we have the technology there that says we can control weeds, insects, and diseases at a reasonable cost, then we've overcome the traditional rationale for having a rotation. I mean, that traditional rationale has been that's the way you break the insect, weed, and disease cycle. Do we need that in the future? That's the $64,000 question. I don't pretend to know that. I suspect the answer is yes, we will see those technologies. How soon, how fast, how widespread, at what cost, those are all yet to be seen.
Early adapters tend to make the most money when things change. Will those farmers that are already or are willing to go to more corn, do you think, make more money in the future than those that don't?
It appears that way. I mean, if you're talking near future, 2, 3 years, I mean, one way to judge that is just to look at the futures market and say, what is the futures market saying for 07, 08 crops? it does suggest, even with escalating costs of production of corn relative to soybeans, that those prices would show more profitability for corn per acre than soybeans. So yes, if you can do that at a reasonable cost, the market is saying that's probably the more profitable way to go the next 2 or 3 years.
Would you be willing to bet on sales at this point? That's kind of an odd... I mean, because there are folks that are looking at 2007 and making corn sales already in 2008 and making some corn sales that far out. And I would think that the variability cost, the energy cost there might, and for that matter, the interest rates might be a threat to making those types of sales.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, how fast are the cost of production going to increase over the next 2 years? And equally important is what kind of supply concerns will we have with the 07 and 08 growing season. I mean, we've had a bit of a problem in 05 regionally. 06 is a little bit dry regionally. On a surface, $3 corn looks pretty attractive. But if we have a significant weather problem in either 07 or 08, then you say, well, $3 didn't look quite so attractive. So it's not a slam dunk in my mind in saying, yeah, some people are saying, hey, this is a no-brainer. How often do you get a chance to sell $3 corn? So I guess my thinking is that we kind of do that in modestly. I would be a little reluctant to be real aggressive at doing that. Or I would be thinking about strategies that would help me manage that risk of weather problems come 07 and 08.
Two more topics to discuss in the last 6 minutes here. China, one of them, and then storage for this fall as the other. Let's start with China, demand for both corn and soybeans.
I think soybeans is the easiest one. China is now buying 40% of the world imports of soybeans. I don't think there's anybody that disagrees that they're going to continue to be a major buyer of soybeans, a major consumer of soybeans. It cannot produce domestically anywhere near the amount they need. They're going to be a major buyer for meal and oil. And so I think that's a very strong positive for world demand for soybeans. The intriguing question is corn. We've seen in recent years China as a net exporter of corn, as much as 600 million bushels, this year down to 150. Interestingly, for the 06-07 marketing year, USDA is still projecting China export 160 million bushels of corn. Their domestic consumption is increasing 3-5% a year. I think they're very quickly we're going to see China be a net importer of corn, maybe in 06-07, but certainly in the next 2 or 3 years. That's going to change the world balance quite a bit. Look for U.S. corn exports to continue to auger higher as we move through the future.
And that would mean, relatively speaking, that division between corn and soybeans, North and South America, would be more entrenched, I would think, rather than less.
Right. Argentina is a major corn exporter, but put it in perspective, U.S. exports 72% of all the trade, Argentina 12%. They're not going to be able to expand production rapidly enough to keep up with Asian demand, particularly if China has production problems.
Finally, let's come back to this year and storage options and what producers might do, because it certainly looks like next spring will be better than this fall in terms of pricing.
Right. I mean, where we start is we look at the bases and the spreads in next year's market. And on the surface, it looks like this is a storage year. You've got, if you look at the harvest bid for corn, for example, right now in central Illinois, and you look at July 07 futures, you got about a 60-cent difference there. So on the surface, it says get the crop harvested, get it in the bin, store it. To capture that return, you're going to have to forward price it. But I'm not sure it's quite that obvious. The big questions are this: where is the basis going to go in the summer of 07? We're 60 under July futures right now. If that stays at 20 under like it is this year, then you've got a 40-cent premium for storage. for 9 months. If you're paying 8.25% for money, and you're renting commercial storage space, that's about a break even. You're not making a lot of money. Now, if the basis goes to a nickel next spring or summer, there's a 15-cent profit right there for storing the crop. Where is that basis going to go next summer? The point being that a weak basis, a big carry, we almost say it's a no-brainer, store the crop. But I'm saying do two things. Count the cost. The costs of storage are going up dramatically. And two, anticipate where that basis may be going next spring. Is it going to be unusually weak, or will it go back to normal levels? That's the key question.
And does some of that depend on how quickly the ethanol demand is ramped up? It seems to me that there's an awful lot of pent-up ideas, anyway, that the demand will be there, but I'm not sure that all those extra 34 that are under construction and a 7 or 8 expansions will be taking corn in that quickly.
Well, it depends on how quickly demand expands, and that's going to be a local market question. It's going to depend on how big the 06 crop is, and it's going to be a function of how fast transportation costs increase over the next year. So forecasting bases is not as easy as it used to be.
And then how about new crop storage for soybeans?
It's a very similar scenario. You've got about a 60-cent carry to July, but if you count interest cost at 8%, it's a much higher cost of storing the crop because you're storing, you got 4 cents a month just in interest cost if you're borrowing the money to store that crop. So storage doesn't pay off nearly as well as it does on corn because of that higher cost.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
I think that's about it, Todd.
All right. Thanks much, Darrell. Darrell Good, Extension Ag Economist from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Of course, we recorded this on Monday, July the 10th. Dave Dickey and I are both away for the next couple of weeks. Have a good weekend.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Did you miss the closing market report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willag.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.